Welcome or welcome back to Church Media HQ. My name is Luke Clayton and I am your host. My featured guest today is Nate Skelly of Financial Pathway. Nate is a financial advisor and really expert on all things finance. He has his own podcast called the Financial Pathway Podcast, so I encourage you to check that out. And he also helps both individuals and churches alike create a financial plan that helps with retirement, getting out of debt, all types of different services that Nate offers there. And he is my personal financial advisor, and so I would highly recommend that you check out nateskelly.com to look into what Nate can offer you for either you as an individual or you as a church. Well, let's get right to my conversation with Nate Skelly. This is a little bit, I know you said you want to stay in your lane, so if you want to veer right back into it here, but this does affect, I'll use this as a segue. I mean, there's also been, if you will, rumors and talks. Of course, nothing that I know of publicly coming from the Biden platform, if you will, but of, you know, churches nonprofit tax status being affected potentially in the future by, you know, maybe a religious organizations more or less having that removed. I mean, there's been always, I guess, rumblings of that if, you know, if the left, if you will, takes control. Do you think that's a reality, and at least in the near future, or what do you, how do you see that?
No, I mean, personally, do I see that is, you know, imminent? No. The Equality Act, I think basically the logic kind of goes like this. You've got a certain legislation that would be put in place. I think it's called the Equality Act that puts in place protections for LGBTQ community, transgender, mm-hmm. that, you know, as far as protecting from discrimination, these types of things. And if that would be more broadly applied to churches, then churches could find themselves in a situation where, because based on their faith, they would not hire somebody who has, you know, lives an LGBTQ lifestyle, then they could lose their tax exempt status for their discrimination. The Supreme Court just ruled on a case related to this and ruled in church's favor. Mm-hmm. First of all, the Equality Act itself is kind of in that same category with the Green New Deal. I don't believe it's something that would imminently be passed. It would need a supermajority. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. But just on a personal level, do I think that that's an imminent threat to churches? I don't. Could that perhaps be something down the road eventually? Sure, it potentially could. But again, my encouragement or my word to Christians is, okay, even if that does happen, doesn't really change our mission, doesn't really change our calling. Does it make it a little bit more difficult? Yes. Mm-hmm. But again, I guess my standpoint is I try to be very careful to kind of assume the worst outcome, because I've done that in the past, and time again, what I found is the worst assumptions were usually not even close to being true. Yeah. And oftentimes the reality is somewhere in the middle. And you look at people on the left side of the aisle, and maybe some, you know, we talk about things on the right side of the aisle, but on the left side of the aisle, you look at people's kind of fear mongering and they're blowing out of proportion things. And they talk about, you know, Trump is, he's a modern day dictator. He's going to institute martial law. He's going to, you know, use the military to keep himself in power. Well, okay. I think it's pretty clear. We got 6 days to go and that's really not on the table. Yeah. So a lot of the fear on that side about worst case scenarios is often overblown as well. So anyway, kind of veering back into my lane somewhat here. One thing that I failed to mention that I think it would be a really good thing to talk about, especially for those who are low, middle income Americans, people working in churches, that sort of thing, related to what potentially could be done coming down the road with a Biden presidency. One of the things that Biden's talked a lot about is a public option for healthcare. So yeah. Right now, the healthcare landscape's pretty wide and varied as far as, your options and what people use. So if you're, and it goes mainly off of your family size and your income as far as what options are available to you. Now, if you got healthcare through your work, well then there you go. I mean, that takes care of that. But for everybody else, if your income is below the federal poverty level for your family size, then you're eligible for Medicaid or for CHIP. CHIP's the state plan, but Medicaid's the federal plan. But basically, you get healthcare coverage with no premium and very, very low cost. I mean, maybe there's like a copay or coinsurance, but you know, it's maybe $5, $10. I mean, it's very, very affordable, very expensive. So you're getting.
And this is how it is now, right? You're saying
that's how it is now. Yes. Okay. Yes. And then if you're at 100% of the federal poverty level, and they bump up the numbers each year. I think for a family of four, it's around $30,000 a year is the federal poverty level. I think they adjust the numbers every year, but it's in that range. Then if you're at that number or up to four times that number, then you can go on healthcare.gov. That's the Obamacare Affordable Care Act site.
Yeah.
And then you can go shop for a plan, and then you'll get a tax credit that'll lower your premiums. So the lower your income is, the more of a credit you get. So you can get a plan that maybe would have cost $800 a month for maybe $100 a month with your tax credits. And then if you're higher income, maybe you only get $100 tax credit. But you know, the idea is you can get a plan, get coverage, and get a little bit of help on, on the cost. And then of course, if you're above that level, well, you still get the private health insurance, but you're paying the full cost.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. Some people, a lot of Christians use like health sharing ministries. It's not health insurance. That's one thing I always want to caution people about. Like, it's not technically insurance. So, so they don't cover everything and they're not going to cover pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, I can speak to that actually. That's what I have. I have a health sharing plan because I'm a business, and that just was I'm completely on my own in terms of healthcare. I don't qualify for any of what you were just talking about with the healthcare.gov or Medicaid and all that. I have it's called Samaritan, and I've been happy with them. But yeah, like you said, people don't need to get the idea that it's insurance because well visits are not covered. So if you want to go, you know, get a yearly checkup, then, you know, that's completely out of pocket. And depending on what tier you're on, you do have, you know, more or less the deductible, if you will. That's not the term they use, but that's, you know, what common insurance lingo is. For me, it has to be, I believe it's $3,000 before I even can submit and basically request reimbursement. And yeah, everything is reimbursed. So you have to pay out of pocket and then get reimbursed for it. So when my daughter was born, I still had to pay for everything out of pocket, and then they reimbursed me. Now, they did reimburse at the time, the I was on a different level plan. So they did reimburse like everything except for like $300, which was great. But you still had to have the cash or credit card or something to put that initial cost on. So so usually it's within, cause you have to have, you know, and I don't know, I think this is just the similar process across the board with these health share ministries. You have to have the written, you know, invoice more or less. And so you have to submit that, and then they have to review it. In some cases, they're going to call the healthcare provider and they're going to verify everything. And so it was about 6 weeks, before I started seeing checks. Now I will say the nice thing about, you know, in the case of, you know, pregnancy, they do make an exception, at least the one I use specifically does, and they allow you to get an estimate beforehand, before the baby is born, submit the paperwork. So that way you do, in theory, could have the money in hand by the time, you know, you need to pay your bills. But I believe that's the only exception that they make is for pregnancy there. So all that to say, it's certainly not for the monthly cost that I pay in comparison to what you would pay for conventional insurance. I mean, it's a fraction of what you would pay for conventional insurance. So, but you have to consider on the other end what all the, if you will, trade-offs. And so I don't intend to, unless something radical happens in the you know, healthcare industry that makes, you know, conventional insurance as affordable, I don't intend to change anything anytime soon. But again, and another, you know, dental, vision, none of that's covered. You know, that's not going to be even an option from, I mean, it's truly pure health insurance, or health needs, you know. So anyways, I just, since you're talking about that, I am a testimonial, if you will, of, I like it, but I can see how it's not for everybody.
Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, it definitely has drawbacks. The other big drawback is some of the plans, not usually like the highest tier plan, but some of the lower tier plans have a per incident limit.
Like, oh, yeah.
125,000, half a million, whatever. So the idea there is, it's like, man, if somebody gets cancer or if they're in like a really bad car wreck, yep, and you need like reconstructive surgery and like some really high end stuff, potentially you'd get in a situation where you run out of your limit.
Yeah. I was going to say that is another thing. Now for me, it hasn't even been a factor because I haven't been in some type of serious, car accident or, like I said, some serious diagnosis. But yeah, there is a limit. There's different tiers, but, I believe the one I'm on, there's like a, I'm actually looking at it cause I was curious. It's like $236,000 is the limit. $236,500. It's kind of specific. I don't know why, but that is what it is. Anyways, that's that. And then if you jump onto their classic, it actually doesn't go up too much. It's $250,000 flat. So, yeah, like you said, for most people in your everyday situation, that's fine. But to some, who do get into extreme situations, that if you've dealt with hospitals or doctors at all, you know that they aren't cheap. So those costs can add up quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, kind of to bring it all the way back around to Biden and what might be changing. Yeah. So like, those are all like existing options. Like those are all things that are on the table right now. What Biden's been saying is he wants to put out a public option, meaning a new government supplied healthcare plan that people could opt into if they so chose. And so it's not Medicaid, it's not Medicare, but it would be kind of like Medicaid, Medicare, where it's the government that's supplying it. They negotiate with the hospitals and healthcare providers directly for reimbursement rates. And the idea is it's supposed to compete with private insurance, like give you yet another option. Like if you're like in your shoes, Luke, it's like, oh, well, I'm not eligible for Medicaid. I don't have healthcare through a job because I'm self-employed. Well, now I can do this public option. And it would probably be pretty reasonable in cost for a couple reasons. First of all, it's probably going to be pretty highly subsidized. And again, I don't know if this is actually going to happen, but I know this is probably going to be a pretty big priority for the Democrat Party since they have a majority. So I don't know if I can put like percentage odds on it happening, but this is their golden window of opportunity. So, I guess we'll see what shakes out in these next 2 years, but it would probably be highly subsidized. Whatever cost you're paying is not really the true cost. Some of it's being propped up, by government funding. But then also the government will negotiate directly with the hospitals and healthcare providers for reimbursement rates. And that also keeps it, keeps the cost low.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I think if that happens though, if there's a public option, that'll put a lot of pressure on private insurance. Because like you think about it, for a smaller company, if they're providing healthcare, that's expensive, like for their employees. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh man, look at this public option over here. People can go get health insurance for pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just cut our healthcare out, give people a little bit of a raise, tell them to get their own health insurance, you know? So I could see that as a possibility. I know during the campaign, like the Democratic primary, a big split within the party was, do we want universal healthcare coverage? So like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren were some of the ones that were saying, we need to totally overhaul the healthcare system. Just do it like, you know, countries in Europe do it, where Canada, everybody's has coverage. Everybody has healthcare coverage,
yeah.
Single payer system. And Biden was saying, no, we'll keep private insurance around. We just want to add this next option. So that's something to look out for. I think in the short term, certainly just on an individual financial level, having an extra option is not going to be hurtful. It could only be helpful. But long term, though, to our balance sheet, our spending, our revenue, and just healthcare cut our healthcare quality in general, I don't know. Again, I'm not in the healthcare industry. I'm not necessarily in a great position to tell you, oh, here's exactly how I think it's going to shake out. But that is something that is a very real possibility. And especially for those that are low to middle income, something that could really change the financial picture for them. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, got another option, maybe health sharing, healthcare.gov, and now this public option, that might be even better option for some people. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, and honestly, that is the best understanding I've ever gotten of this. Of course, I've heard the term thrown around, public option, and that is actually the best. You explained it to me like I was five, and so it very much helped me to grasp what that means. So, yeah. thank you for walking us through that. And so is there anything else, you know, when it comes to, you know, Biden, the next, you know, at least the next 2 years that we know for sure that more or less is the Democrats are going to have control? Is there anything else to expect as a possibility, maybe even strong possibility of happening?
Yeah. Well, like just kind of some tertiary things like or tangential things, I think is what I meant to say. But like,
I don't know what either word means, so whatever.
Just not necessarily related directly to finances, but just some policy things in general. One of the things he said is first 100 days, he's going to put in a national mask mandate, which yeah. I think honestly is really a symbolic gesture, because it's like,
yeah,
mask wearing is only as good as the enforcement of it. And
yeah.
And that's enforced on a local level. So if your local area is not enforcing mask wearing, they're not likely to begin enforcing mask wearing when Joe Biden becomes president.
Yeah.
So I think that's mainly a symbolic gesture, more of like, hey, you know, I'm saying let's wear masks. So that's one thing. He does want to really ramp up the vaccination deliveries. He wants to get 100 million vaccinations done within the first 100 days. So, I mean, I don't know if that's really a meaningful ramp up from what the time frame is now. But of course, there's already several million that have gotten vaccinations thus far. But I think the main thing, the last thing I would probably say as far as like on a personal financial level, how it could affect you is, even though we just had another $900 billion stimulus bill just passed and check sent out and paycheck or unemployment benefits renewed and PPP for small businesses renewed. Biden's talking about another round of stimulus. So we've already spent about $4 trillion thus far on COVID relief and stimulus. There's really no specifics on what this next round would include, other than Biden and several other Democrats have continually thrown out the $2,000 check number. So apparently that's one of the big things they're very adamant about, is $2,000 checks for everybody. So again, I think like with former or with previous stimulus rounds, we're not going to know the details until it's a done deal. So until then, it'll just be a lot of talk and a lot of conjecture. But who knows, folks? Maybe we're due for yet another round of checks or deposits into your bank account. Which, by the way, I have not gotten my second stimulus checks. So
I just got mine. Yeah, I just got mine the other day. So, you know, hey, great, thanks. Then sorry, I lost my train of thought there, because full disclosure, my contact fell out of my eye, and I was trying to get it back in. I'm good now. I'm good, but I'm just kind of catching up, processing everything you just said about the stimulus checks. So I think what I was coming back to was overall, I don't think that church leaders or people in general need to be worried/concerned about some radical leftist socialist agenda being ushered in the, at least imminently. Not to say that that could never happen, but at least I don't know. Am I correct on that assumption there?
I mean, we're kind of getting into the whole like political opinion area, but I would agree with you in that. Like, if we could rewind the clock and go back to 2015, and I asked Republicans, who would you rather have as president, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or Joe Biden? If we did a poll, my suspicion, and I think it's the correct suspicion, would be that the answer to that poll would overwhelmingly be Joe Biden. I think if people had to choose between those three back then, they would have chosen Joe Biden, because that's the whole reason Barack Obama chose him as his vice president, because Barack Obama was seen as kind of this young and more radical, quote unquote, extreme, you know, politician who is more associated with the farther reaches of the left wing. But Joe Biden, here's a guy who's from a Midwest state in Pennsylvania, or he's from Scranton, but you know what I'm saying? Like a state that is kind of known as more of a blue collar Midwest type feel state. Here's a guy who's been in Congress for a long time, who has a lot of experience in politics, and who's kind of considered more of a moderate guy. So he would help to balance the ticket, so to speak. Yeah. So, and a lot of concerns I've been talking to folks about recently has been more in relation to the market. Like, Nate, the Democrats are going to be in control. Look at all these policies. Look at all the spending. Look at all these things you're going to put in place. I think that's going to be bad for the market. So, give me one second. I'm getting feedback. I'm going to put the headphones on. All right. Can you hear me there?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay. So, as far as the, what was I saying? With,
the market, with the market, basically.
So, yeah. So what I've been saying to people is, listen, at the end of the day, what moves the market is a lot of factors, and who's in the White House and who's in Congress is just one of them. There's a reason why the market over the years has done well under both Republicans and Democrats, because a lot of times what's happening in the market now is a result of something that was put in place 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It's based on the price of gold, inflation rates, tariffs, what's happening internationally. There's just so many things that are going into it. Like, for instance, think about George Bush back in, well, really his entire president. Back in 2001, there was the tech bubble burst. Was that Bush's fault? No, I mean, that was a result of something that had been happening for a few years. It just happened to kind of explode when he was in office. Similar with the financial crash and the recession of 2008, 2009. That was a lot to do with investments in collateralized mortgage loans and the housing market. It really had very little to do with presidential policies. So it really wasn't Bush's fault or Obama's fault. It just happened kind of in that shift between their presidencies. Yeah. So while sometimes negative things that happen during a president's tenure has nothing to do with them. At the same time, sometimes really good things and expansions in the economy don't really have much to do with the president who's in power. It's a result of things that have been in the works for a long time.
Yeah.
So going forward into 2021, could the market tank and go into a recession? Sure. Of course it mm-hmm. could. I'm not saying that that's not a possibility. It certainly is. But at the same time, we've got vaccinations being ramped up. We've got a lot of pent up demand for travel and entertainment and some of these industries that have been really held back over this last year. So regardless of what Joe Biden does and the Democrats do, I don't think that's going to affect the market all that much. I think what's going to affect the market is a lot of other factors that have been in play for a while now. So of course, if it goes up, Joe Biden, the Democrats will love to take credit for it and say, this is our economy. And if it tanks, then they can say, well, this was Trump's fault because of what he put in place during his presidency. So they'll play it to their advantage either way.
Well, I think a good just kind of real-time example of that, we're obviously going to see us come out of the pandemic under Biden's administration. That's just how things are naturally, and the economy is going to go back into full swing. I'm tired of trying to predict when, so I'm not going to. But I think I can be pretty confident in the next 4 years we'll normalize and things aren't going to be as... because we're already seeing, I couldn't live this way for another 4 years. But what's going to happen is, the Democrats are going to say, Biden, man, look, he led us out of the pandemic. And the truth is, whether you like Trump or not, he under his administration is when everything was really put in the vaccines and all these different procedures. That was all put in the motion under him. And so it's a great way of looking at it, same way with the economy. Just because the economy is good or bad under a certain president doesn't necessarily mean that it's that guy's fault. Because unpopular opinion amongst conservatives here, we had a good economy under Trump, but that's not necessarily accredited to him directly. There were some policies and things that he did that I'm sure helped it, but it's not that you say this is 100% Donald Trump gave us a good economy. That's not a very objective statement. Well, thanks again for joining us here at Church Media HQ. We hope that you'll take a moment to subscribe wherever you're listening or maybe watching this content. We're available on all podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and many more platforms beyond that. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel so that whenever we drop new episodes or new content, you will be notified. And you can also like this video on YouTube or even on Facebook, and that is a huge help because it helps the content get seen by other church leaders like you. And we are grateful every time you join us for our episodes and the new content that we drop, and you hope you will continue to join us in the weeks ahead. Well, as always, I want to challenge you this week, try something new. Just try something. Whether you think it's going to work or not, just try something, because it is always so much better to fail at trying something great than to succeed at doing the average. See you next time on Church Media HQ.